gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 14 of the Truly Schmitty Show. I am your host, Jacob H. Schmidt, and my executive producer, Max Holiday. Last episode, we talked a little bit about a lot of stuff. We talked Blackhawks, we talked some Pete Rose, we talked some A-Rod, we talked some White Sox. This week, we're going to talk a little bit of Cubs. We'll follow in the baseball suit a little bit because even as a White Sox fan, I've got to say I'm pretty excited about what's happening on the North side. Good for those guys. They deserve a break. We're going to talk a little bit about my last couple nights in pro wrestling because I did have one kind of match and then a regular match this past weekend. And we'll talk a little bit of wrestling as a whole because really there's been some injury concerns as of late in WWE with a couple guys. And we're going to talk about that. But let's get started here. Before we do it, actually, take that back. Make sure that you listen to us on hpn247.com, hpn.listen, the number 2, myradio.com. You could follow me at Jacob_H_Schmidt on Twitter. You could follow Max Holiday at Holiday Special. And you could also email me at trulyschmitty@gmail.com if you have any concerns, questions, comments, or any crap you want me to talk about on the radio, on the show. Because that's what I do. I'm your dancing monkey. If you want to be entertained, you just let me know what you want to hear. But let's get to it. Chicago Cubs. Would you believe if I told you a year ago the Chicago Cubs would be number 2 in the NL Central? Would you believe that if I told you that the Chicago Cubs would have one of the most exciting baseball teams in baseball as a whole? A lot of people have projected that the Cubs were going to be good. A lot of people saw the offensive talent they had coming up through the farm system. Let's be honest. The Chicago Cubs and Theo Epstein have done a miraculous job with this team. And this isn't the first time Theo Epstein has done this. He completely remade the Boston Red Sox in the early 2000s. Took them from the team that was struggling to even sniff the playoffs and turned them into a championship team twice over under his control. And then, because of the way he handled business, actually got them a third World Series for a team that had nearly as long a streak of losing as the Chicago Cubs did. And now Theo Epstein's doing something that nobody would ever think was going to happen in Chicago on that side of the city. The Chicago Cubs, the only time that the Chicago Cubs have won the World Series was on Back to the Future and Rookie of the Year, or if you played any of the baseball games. And let's be honest, if you did, you made some trades that probably made that team a lot better than what they were. But nobody expected this. I mean, okay, we expected it. We expected the Cubs to be good. When they started making the deals they did to get the players they did, when they started drafting differently and looking at this team differently and not just drafting guys they thought that had talent, but actually going and getting guys that were legit talent. Being able to, they bottomed this team out. They did the NBA route. Make the team as bad as possible to get yourself as high a pick as possible. That's what the Cubs did. They bottomed out to get players like Chris Bryant, to get players like Kyle Schwarber that's coming up through the system. They made trades to get guys like Addison Russell. They picked up players like Jorge Soler, and they did this year after year for the past few 4 seasons. This team has gone from a team that was a laughingstock to a team that, with what they're doing, is going to be one of the top teams in baseball. There's no jokes about that. And this coming from a diehard White Sox fan. I've loved the White Sox pretty much ever since we moved from California, which was 1988. Came from LA, instantly came here. My mom was a Chicago White Sox fan, followed right in suit, started learning all about the White Sox. This kills me, to be honest with you. My White Sox were supposed to be good. We were supposed to have a good team this year, and it just isn't happening. But fans on the North side, they could start to be excited about this team. Really, in my opinion, they're one top-of-the-line pitcher away from being a playoff contender this year. And just like with any sport, once you get in, you can pretty much, anything goes. Just put it that way. Once you actually make it in the playoffs, anything goes. And the Cubs right now are, they're making some waves in baseball. I mean, you look at the offensive talent on this team and there's very few comparisons. You've got Miguel Montero as the current catcher who defensively is very good, offensively is one of the better catchers in baseball. Anthony Rizzo, who's an MVP candidate. He hits for power and he hits for average. You've got Addison Russell, who's one of the brightest young players in this game right now, who's naturally a shortstop, has converted to second base for the team, plays a great defense, and is going to be an offensive weapon. Probably should be at the top of your lineup, really, to be honest with you. Starlin Castro is not a power hitter, but he's playing in that area where he's a power-type player, hits for average. Not a great defensive shortstop, but I think that wasn't so much talent, more so than him not caring. When you're playing on bad teams, you tend to not focus as much. This has kind of changed for him now. His focus is on baseball, and he's starting to play better. Third base, you've got one of the brightest young players in baseball, Chris Bryant. This guy is a phenom. He's going to hit for average, probably going to be a 280, 290 guy every year. He's going to get you 35 to 40 homers a year, 30 to 40 probably. Not a great defensive player. Get that out of the way right now. Probably won't play third base his whole career. He'll probably move to the outfield, more than likely a corner position, but I'm also hearing rumblings this guy is athletic enough to play center. If he can play a formidable center field and be able to hit for what he's hitting, and then maybe move a guy like Baez into third, and then you have this infield of Rizzo, Russell, Castro, and Baez in the infield. Baez is a guy that's going to get you 18 to 25 homers, if not a little bit more every year. Granted, he's going to strike out like crazy and it's going to drive people nuts. But when he gets up here and he's able to start hitting those homers, he hit 9 homers in the end of the season last year. And granted, it's garbage time. Still, 9 homers for a second baseman, his position now. This could be exciting. Then you go to the outfield. Right now they've got a platoon of Chris Coughlin and I can't think of the other guy in left field. Center field, you've got Dexter Fowler, who's a very good baseball player. He's not overwhelming in any one asset of the game, but a very good all-around player. Right field, you've got another hot prospect in Jorge Soler. Guy hits for power. He's going to hit a pretty decent average. He's a good hand in the outfield. This team is looking good. Then you look at their pitching staff, that's where their weakness is. You've got John Lester at the front, Jake Arrieta. You've got Jason Hamill, and then Kyle Kendricks and Takoshi Wada as your 5 pitchers. And granted, it's not overwhelming, but I think the top 3 are going to do a lot for you. And you get one more pitcher in there. This team, 4-man deep, they can make a run in the playoffs and they could cause some real damage. So the business is looking up for the North side of baseball team. You kind of missed what I was talking about here, Max. I'm talking about your team.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just, you know, I don't usually talk Cubs on this program. So I was having a nice little conversation about how good I think this team could possibly be. So, should be pretty exciting.
Well, yeah, I'm a huge Cubs fan, but I have absolutely no idea how they're doing this year. I mean, I'm a Cubs fan.
Cubs fan, not a baseball fan.
Yeah, there you go.
See,
so the Cubs are. I pay attention. The Cubs are doing good. Yes, Cubs are doing bad. Shit.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where I'm at. So, sorry.
Well, no, that's okay. To be honest with you, I love baseball.
Yeah.
But the beginning of the season and the end of the season are the times that are truly exciting for me. Okay. The middle of the season is kind of really right around the All-Star game. I tend to pay attention a little bit more just to see where, you know, some of the players are at and that. But now that, you know, I'm doing the sports podcast, I got to pay a little bit more attention to what's going on in the baseball world.
I understand that.
But, you know, here we go. We're talking some Cubs here and just talking baseball in general. We talked a lot on the last podcast about the White Sox and what their turmoil is and where they're looking at. Not looking good for the Southsiders. And I talked a lot about some of the moves they can make and some of the guys that they're untouchable, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of people's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think we're going to jump a little bit. You know, we'll talk some, let's see.
Go here. Cubbies.
Yeah, go Cubbies. Oh, man, it kills me to even say that. But maybe we'll talk a little bit of basketball, because first off, I've got to say congratulations to the Golden State Warriors. I hadn't been able to bring this up yet because they actually hadn't won on my last podcast, which was last Wednesday. They beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in six games. Not a surprise, because he played a great series. No, Andre Iguodala was the MVP of the finals, and it's a great win. It's a good team win. Steph Curry is a phenomenal basketball player, but he wasn't going to single-handedly win that series for him. This is a bum. Okay, we'll talk about it. We're going to go ahead and talk about it, because if I don't, then I'm just going to keep getting hit with it. LeBron James, I'm not a fan of his by any stretch. He had to do a lot more than what most guys in the finals have to do. Two of his running mates, the two guys that were brought to be, or not brought in because Kyrie Irving was already here, but Kevin Love brought in to make that big three in Cleveland, and neither one of them played. Kevin Love didn't play since the first round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Kyrie Irving was injured most of the finals, and LeBron still made it semi-interesting. He got him to game six. He played his heart out. I mean, you say what you want about him. The guy played as hard as he could, but at the same time, too, he had to take a lot more shots than he normally would, and he played out of his game. His game is more of a Magic Johnson style. Get other people the ball, and his scoring chances come when they start hitting their shots.
Yeah.
He's able to drive to the basket more. He's able to get more open jump shots. LeBron, as great a player as he is not a natural scorer. He's not a Michael Jordan who's going to go out and be able to rack up 40 shots and probably hit 60% of them to get his points. LeBron's a volume shooter. The more he shoots, he's got to take more shots to make more shots. And that's not going to be great. That's not going to be good for a team that doesn't have another superstar there to be able to kind of balance that out. And that's what Cleveland was lacking. They didn't have that. They have basically, it was LeBron and role players. J.R. Smith, Timothy Mozgov, Tristan Thompson, those guys, they're role players. They're not somebody that's going to be able to take over a game and win you a championship. And that's what any championship team needs. They need at least a number two guy. That's why LeBron went to Miami when he did, to get those guys to be able to win championships. Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh were those guys to take over when LeBron couldn't do it. Tim Duncan and the Spurs, same deal. Granted, they were all on the same team, but Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili. Any of those guys could take over a game to be champions. They could take over that game to win a championship for you. LeBron didn't have anybody. You look at Golden State. You got the Splash Brothers and Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. Phenomenal players.
Say the Flash Brothers?
No, not the Flash. Splash Brothers.
My bad.
No, not the Flash
Brothers. Thought we were on wrestling.
No. We'll be going to wrestling shortly. But we'll talk about the basketball finals here a little bit more. But they had an overall team victory. You look at Andre Iguodala. He's been around for a long time. He's a very good player. Top of the line player, maybe at one point in his career. Right now, he's a highly rated role player. When you've got guys like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry on your team, you're there to kind of be there to help him out. But he was able to take over and play in this game and become an MVP. And that's what Golden State needed to win this championship. They needed an overall team victory to win, where it wasn't going to be able to be Steph Curry dominating by himself to win. And I've got to give it to Steve Kerr, rookie NBA coach, able to come in and take this team from where they were a first round exit most years in the playoffs and actually taking them to the promised land and getting them a championship. And the scary thing about this team, they're still young. Most of their core players are only 2 to 3 seasons in the league. So this team's going to be around for a while. And the West, while it is a tougher conference, they could be able to win a couple more championships right there with the nucleus that they have. So once again, congratulations, Golden State Warriors, and even congratulations to the Cleveland Cavaliers for making it to the NBA Finals. Cleveland's definitely had a hard run trying to get a championship there. It's been, I think, almost 60 years, 50 years. The last team to actually win a championship for them was the Cleveland Browns with Jim Brown.
Yeah, my ex-father-in-law used to tell me all about it.
Mm.
He was a big Browns fan.
Ooh, but, you know. Ouch.
Yeah.
That's got to be a pain. You know, You know who my favorite Browns fan is of all time?
Who's that?
Butcher from PCW.
Oh, really?
Oh, my. It's so funny. Every year that we would be going into the football season, oh, the Browns are going to be great this year. That's They're going to win everything. He knew there was no chance That's it was awesome. Ever going to happen. But it was just funny that ever-hoping gleam of, my team's going to make it all the way. And
I'll apologize because I didn't do my proper executive producer duties. Some people on Periscope had actually asked you a question or two.
Oh.
And I couldn't read it way up there on the camera.
Oh.
So I finally got it like synced into my laptop and I missed the question. So sorry to those that are viewing this live as this is being recorded.
Feel free to ask your questions again, and if we get them, we'll definitely answer them. I've got no problem with that. I love questions because it lets me open up a little bit more. Lets me introduce you to myself to my fans. But
let you open up more, really?
I know I'm a closed book.
Okay.
Well.
But apparently me turning that sideways is wrong. I don't know.
Sorry. But I'm going to take a little bit of a break here. Not a break, but just to let everybody know, make sure you listen to us at hpn247.com and hpn.listen2myradio.com. And then we're going to jump into some professional wrestling. Since we don't have a Thursday Night Thunder this week, I think I got to pick up that ball and carry it for the team.
For the next 12 minutes.
For 12 minutes. So we're going to go through it quick. First off, I just had, in the past 2 weeks, I had my final two wrestling matches as a professional wrestler because I'm moving on to a career that's not going to allow me to be part of professional wrestling anymore. So I worked for New Age Wrestling, and I was able to do a little bit of something at the end of the night with my friend Jeremiah, known as Jarek Ferrick, Anunnaki. He's got a bunch of names, but him and I ended up doing a little thing at the end of the show. And the end story is Tristan Hayes actually came out and made the save and let me win. So thanks, Tristan. I owe you one that I'll never be able to cash in. But this past weekend, this past Saturday, I had my final match, and I had it against somebody. He's a... you know what? We break kayfabe here, so it is what it is. It was a masked character, but it was really one of my friends and one of the guys who believed in me when a lot of other people didn't, and that's Gordon Dennis. I was supposed to be wrestling my best friend Titan, but due to the passing of his father, he wasn't feeling in the mood to be able to perform. So we decided that I was going to be facing Gordon in my final match, and it's somebody that I've wrestled numerous times, including on my mom's memorial show in 2009. It was the man that I won my first and only championship from. So we have a history going back from the time that I started in professional wrestling. My first match with them, which this is still one of my favorite memories of wrestling of all time, me and Kevin Palmer, also known as Nuke, teaming up against Rage and the less swole supervillain status of Trauma. He wasn't quite the Trauma that we know now. And the whole match, it was supposed to be where I was getting all the heat in the match and Nuke was supposed to go in and take the finish. Nuke didn't take the finish. I ended up doing it.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
So I always think about that.
Nuke, who's the coolest guy in the room? Sorry, you don't know that story. There you go.
So we had a show this past Saturday. It was for a block party on 105th and Ewing in Chicago. Typical indie wrestling show. It was a cluster.
Dude, the locker room was the storefront for a gold to cash deal, man. That was awesome. We had a leather couch.
We had two couches.
We had two leather couches. We had big glass windows to look outside into over the fans.
And everybody to look at us as we were dressing.
Yes, yes. Have you ever gotten naked in a storefront? Because we have.
We had about a 3x4 window of air conditioning that was coming amazing. Through the cash window. But no, the ring ended up being 2.5 hours late. By the time we got to go on, we had 40 minutes to do a wrestling show.
You had 40 minutes to do, what was it, 7 matches?
Right.
Well, 7 matches that turned into 6 matches. No, that turned into 5.
4 matches.
It was 4 matches?
4 matches.
It started out at 7 matches.
Right. It got cut in half.
And it went down to 4 matches. Holy cow.
Yeah. And I ended up wrestling second on the card. And it was fun. It wasn't a 5-star match, but I went out there. I pissed off a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I had fun doing what I did. And to be honest with you, something that I haven't done before, I called the whole match and called it all in the ring.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you masturbated in front of people.
No, that I've done before. Oh. Wait, no, no, that's not what we're talking
about.
Wrong
show, sorry, wrong show.
Oh, that's for grumpy old men, I think.
Yeah, so you, okay, sorry.
So yeah, I got to call the whole match, which is something I've actually never done in my career, and actually do it in the ring. And I was just like, this is going to be my opportunity to kind of be my last thank you to all the people that have kind of helped me throughout my career and people that have given me opportunities when I really never had them before. And Max, you're one of them. You're somebody that I've worked with since day one. Somebody that used to beat the crap out of me when I first started, and somebody that I had a rivalry with about 5 years ago. And we've done, you know, there's a lot of guys out there. So I'm just going to go through a quick list. And Rion Skills, the man I faced more than probably anybody in this business. Chi-Town T, my first trainer. Gordon Dennis, my second trainer, and somebody that I worked with a lot of times and somebody that always kind of believed in me even when I didn't. Then the whole PCW crew, I talk a lot of crap about it, but that was really my opportunity to get to work with more people and to work with some of the guys that I'm working with today. If I didn't have that opportunity in 2008, I wouldn't be doing anything right now, probably. So thank you to Wally Wild, Rick Knight, P.L. Myers, Butcher, even though it kills me to say this. No, I'm not going to say it. So I'm leaving that name out because I was about to, but there's two guys there that really, if they didn't believe in me at all, I wouldn't have made it out. I would have never made it anywhere else. I was supposed to be wrestling. I had a back injury where I had to have surgery, but Santana Starks and Daniel Allure, they convinced PCW to let me become a referee there. And I, at that point, became one of the best referees, in my opinion, on the independent scene. For a long time, a lot of people wanted me in their matches.
You reffed me versus Mike Anthony.
I did, and I enjoyed that match very much, and right up until the point that I got hit in the face.
Yeah.
Bastards. But
sorry.
No, what's funny is that I'm trying not to toot my own horn, but I guess I kind of have to.
Yep.
I was such a good ref at PCW that I was supposed to be managing a year before I actually did, and the only reason I didn't is that the great PCW champion and Johnny Mack wouldn't let me become a manager because he wanted me to ref his final match at PCW, knowing that that following Dream Night was going to be his last match and he wanted me to be his referee. So I don't want to say I didn't like it, but you know, I was always wanting to be a manager because I felt that I was better at it. But thank you, Johnny. I never got to say that publicly.
Draven. And,
no, not Draven. Mack. Titans Hero, by the way.
Ooh.
Really Titans Hero.
Really?
Oh, we got to get him in.
He's a Mark?
He's a Mac Mark.
Really? Wow.
Oh, it's hilarious. He'll tell you that Johnny Mac could put anybody over and make them the next great thing.
Do you have connections to Johnny Mac?
I don't, sadly enough. Maybe I do. I would have to dig a little bit, but I might be able to get Mr. Mac on. That'd be an interesting night.
Remember Skype.
Oh, yes. But thank you, Johnny Mac, because you know what? That actually means a lot to me because I did put a lot of work into becoming a referee. And then moving on, Santana Starks for giving me an opportunity to be a ring announcer, when I really didn't have any other opportunities. And ARW, New Age, pretty much every other promotion that I worked for. Thank you so much. And then there's a handful of guys that I kind of want to thank because I ran with them for, about a year solid, maybe 2 years. And that's, Christopher St. Michael, Mike Malloy, Leon Tatum, Willie Richardson, Christopher Avance, Joshua Robinson, or Joshua Christensen, or now he is Mojo McQueen. Thank you guys. Thank you for letting. Oh, and Titan, I forgot about him. Thank you guys for letting me manage you. Thank you for letting me be the ringleader of that crazy menagerie that we had as the Chosen. That meant a lot to me, and that was some of my favorite times in wrestling was being able to run with you guys. It didn't end the way we wanted to, but you know what? I think for a while there, we actually could have made something out of it. But with that being said, thank you to everybody that I ran across in wrestling. It was truly a great 13 years. And, you know, in professional wrestling, it's never a really goodbye until it's over, until you're put in the ground. But right now, it's definitely going to be a long hiatus. And hopefully I'll be able to come out and check out some shows before it's all said and done.
But don't worry, his outlet still remains here.
Right here. This is what I'm doing instead of wrestling. This is my outlet to be able to vent and piss people off and hopefully make some friends in the process too, and get my connections that I have to come on here and interview them and talk to them and be able to bring you guys into more of what it is like for us as independent performers, because it's a crazy mess, to be honest with you. You never know what you're going to get at a show. You don't know if you're going to get paid. You never know what's going to happen when you walk into a venue. So with that being said, that's my little kind of goodbye to wrestling. And we've got a few minutes here, and this is something that I kind of want to talk about. WWE, they've kind of had, I don't want to say a rash of injuries, but past couple of weeks they've had some injuries. Last night, Joey Mercury legitimately got hurt during the attack that on Brock Lesnar. The Authority supposedly left the ring with Seth Rollins and attacked Brock Lesnar from behind, and Mercury got thrown in, or was it? No, I'm sorry, not Noble, Mercury. Jamie Noble. Jeez, I don't know what I was thinking because I just clicked in my head. Jamie Noble got thrown into the guardrails, kind of tossed around a little bit, has some broken ribs. And WWE, even though it's not a work, has turned it into their own. They've been able to make their own narrative on it. And they're basically saying Brock Lesnar manhandled him. Brock Lesnar destroyed him. Brock being Brock. And they've kind of turned the narrative from being a legit story into a legit work, a shoot work, whatever you want to call it. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, Lesnar and Rollins is going to be a good match, I believe. And having Brock Lesnar in WWE is always good for business. But it's just kind of funny seeing that happen. And, you know, my thoughts are out for Jamie Noble. Hopefully you get well soon, because I can only imagine how bad that's hurting right now. And I've only got about a minute left that I really have a chance to discuss this. But Tyson Kidd recently got injured, taking the muscle buster from Samoa Joe in a dark match. And a lot of people are blaming Samoa Joe, most notably Bret Hart, and saying that it's the muscle buster. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the muscle buster has been used for a long time, and I've never heard one person complain about taking that move in the whole time that Samoa Joe's been doing it. Because if you're a professional wrestler, you know how to take that. It's a back bump. It's the first bump that you learn in professional wrestling. All Joe's doing is helping you get to the ground. So if you're paying attention to what you're doing, you shouldn't get hurt. And Max, I think you have an interesting perspective on this, yep, and kind of where I'm leaning, so I'll let you run with it.
I do think that Tyson got hurt. I do think he got hurt.
Right.
But I believe that WWE, in their infinite wisdom, has taken this reality scenario and turned it into an angle to where his neck is broken now, and it's pissed off Bret Hart. What better way to make this guy that's coming in, that's getting the quote-unquote preferential treatment and doing all kinds of things that is out of the norm for a superstar when they come in. What better way to give him his first match in? He breaks someone's neck. Well, that's a dangerous man. The right. reputation he's now yep. coming in with, that's a dangerous man. He's still going to be allowed to wrestle. And now Bret Hart, a WWE legend, I guarantee you, Bret Hart's going to confront Samoa Joe on TV. And once he does, you're going to go, fuck, Max was right.
Yep. And I never thought about it that way, Max. I'm starting to lean that way. But with that being said, that's where we're leaving it tonight, folks. Thank you for tuning in to episode 14. For all of our Periscope fans, thank you for watching. And on behalf of my executive producer extraordinaire, Max Holiday, and myself, thank you so much and have a great evening. You've just listened to episode 14 of Truly Schmitty.